And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, there's a national emergency, another national emergency that Trump has declared. This one might actually be a national emergency. However, the question is Trump the national emergency?
He's been the national emergency since January 2017.
Well, but this one is quite remarkable. I mean, this isn't some made-up crap in order to justify border walls or trade barriers or what have you, where he made use of the national emergency laws really improperly just to justify something he couldn't get away with any other way that the Congress would have stopped him from doing. Here we have a real emergency where lives are at stake. I don't think there's been anything like this health-wise since the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918.
Pretty much. That's where I think we're going back to. And, you know, when you consider how little they could do or they knew back in 1918, and here we are over 100 years later, and we have all of this knowledge, and we still are having such difficulties.
You're dealing with people who don't have the knowledge. I mean, in the Trump administration, you have a group of people who do not believe that science is true. I mean, they really don't believe. It's not that they're stupid. They have a fixed belief. Science is not true. So if science is not true and you don't have to be guided by the laws of objective reality, why do you have to prepare for epidemics? In fact, you can get away with not having to bother with epidemics because you can just wish them away, right?
Yeah, I mean, conspiracies sell. You can always, you know, there's a sucker born every minute for these things. You know, I mean, first of all, this thing was a hoax. Then it wasn't any worse than the common cold. I see where Alex Jones is selling toothpaste that he claims will cure the coronavirus. There are people who are not drinking Corona beer because they think they can get the virus that way. And you have people in positions of power and positions of being able to do something who are just allowing these things to go on. You mentioned, I mean, you can't build a wall against this. Germs don't respect borders or walls or things like that.
And they're not foreign.
No.
There's no such thing as an English virus or a Brazilian virus.
Yeah. I mean, over time, they've, we've had, at one, like you said, they had the Spanish flu, which I was reading today probably started in America.
Right.
They had the Asian flu back in the late 50s, if you recall. They had that. They had the Hong Kong flu. They give it names, and a lot of these things do start in China, in effect. But what difference does it make where it is? I mean, they're treating this we have no, you know, we can blame somebody for it rather than taking the bull by the horns and doing something about it.
But the truth is, you can blame the Trump administration because they knew about this thing in January, maybe before January, but not later than the beginning of January. They did nothing to prepare the country.
They didn't make
sure that the proper testing was done. Just the opposite. They tried to make believe it didn't exist, and they did nothing.
Well, they hid information, like they've been hiding information about the environment and by other things. But this even started several years back when they did away with the office that worked out of the White House to deal with pandemics.
Trump claims he knew nothing about that.
Well, he.
This was
he,
on the National Security. This office was part of the National Security Council, his right. private counsel. He says he didn't know anything about it. You know what? He could be telling the truth.
Well, he might not have known anything about it, but the fact of the matter is he's in charge. Remember, Harry yeah. Truman said the buck stops here. And, of course, Trump, his great lines is only I can fix it. He and he alone can fix it. Now he doesn't know anything about it. He says, I refuse to take responsibility. All of these lines in there that that show that really, you know, that he's in way over his head and that he cannot be depended on for things.
But in fairness, let's face it, we don't have to worry about that. He's appointed Jared Kushner to be in charge. So, I mean, really, what are you worried about?
Well, now that Jared has fixed the Mideast.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, he had nothing to do this week.
Right.
So he gave
right.
him this to do. But
right. Yeah. By the way, did you notice that Jared's wife, Ivanka, they've come out and they've said that she's not going to be doing some public, some of the public things in public. Do you think that there's something behind that?
Yeah, the thing that's behind that is that she was in the same meeting that her father was with the Brazilian foreign ministry official who tested positive for coronavirus
and
shook his hand. And if she had a brain in her head, she would immediately quarantine herself.
Yeah. You know, Trump, it was remarkable in his Friday press conference, he kept introducing these people the heads of different stores, the heads of Walmart and Target and CVS and whatever. And, of course, they had to come up and praise him. And then he shook their hands afterwards, after everybody in his team is told one thing you shouldn't do is shake hands. Except one of the guys actually did the elbow bump, and Trump looked really like he was uncomfortable doing that. He hasn't set an example. He said he's not going to, first he said he wasn't going to get tested. Then he said he might. And then he said he's going to, but he hasn't yet. I mean, what's holding this thing up for him being tested?
Yeah, because he's a tough guy.
He's a tough guy.
Tough guys don't get tests. They don't need tests.
Well, they don't get germs.
They're tough guys.
They don't get germs.
Nah, they spit germs out.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
And
You don't mess with tough guys.
And if he ever did get it, I mean, what do you think is going to happen with the White House? Is he going to disappear for 2 weeks?
Well,
what would, you know, I don't even want to get into that speculation. The type of cover up that you would see on this. But as you said, there's all these people that are violating all these rules. I mean, we had the people, Ted Cruz is in voluntary quarantine. I wish he'd stay there because the CPAC convention, there was somebody there that tested positive. And some of the others are there as well. Is it Mark Meadows who was just appointed chief of staff? He's in the same place.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, the what this thing is, the effect it has on real people, the dislocations, something like 19 or 20 states have closed the schools. What that does with families is enormous. You know, if people are working, now their kids aren't at school during the day, they have to get people to take care of them. The kids, many of these kids are on aid, in terms of nutrition and food. You know, how do you, the one good meal that they ever got was at school. Schools are trying to figure out how to do that. All sorts of things. And then they have all these businesses that are closing down. The cruise ship industry is basically destroyed for a while. The airlines are taking huge hits.
And how are people going to pay their rent if they can't go to work?
Well, that's, yeah.
You know, I mean, think of the dislocation and the horrors that this forces on working people who are completely innocent. They didn't do anything. and they can't make a living. No one's offering to pay them. No one's abating their rent. No one's feeding them. If they test positive, who's going to pay to get them better? If ever there was an argument for Medicare for all, this coronavirus business certainly is.
Well, and the cascade effect.
Yep.
People who get sick now aren't going out. People aren't going to restaurants. We, you know, before the show, we were talking about all the entertainment things that have shut down. Entertainment is a huge, hundreds of billions of dollar industry in the United States. Disneyland, I heard the statistic that since 1955, when it was open, they'd only closed for 2 days. Now they're closed indefinitely. The people that work there, the people that work around there, all the sporting events, the NCAA, which is a multi, you know, hundreds of millions of dollar event in March, March Madness, gone. The South by Southwest Festival, gone. All the major league sports, you know, either canceling games or postponing games. So people who work in those venues, they have nothing to do. They're not recording. They have no income on that. All the cottage industries that feed off of these things, they're gone.
Well, we have we're going to see a enormous economic dislocation as a result of this, and this thing isn't ending now. This thing isn't going to peak for another 2 months. This is continuing and growing, intensifying.
They're talking 6 to 8 weeks for a peak.
All right, 2 months.
Yeah. My doctor said he thought it was going to be, you know, at least 3 to 4 weeks we would see something. And depending on how well they can get, you know, ahead of this, they'll never get ahead of it. How well they could just try to minimize the contagion now that it's out there. We'll have to see.
The Center for Disease Control has four models. They anticipate four different scenarios of what could happen. In the most benign model, there's only 200,000 cases. And in the most extreme model, there's 1,700,000 cases. In general, they expect there will be 100,000 people that have to be sent to the hospital. We don't have that many hospital beds available. It's just that simple. Well, we're talking about potentially 40 to 50,000 deaths in the next few months. Yeah. It's an enormous problem.
Yeah, well, we had Trump, you know, a couple weeks ago said he didn't know how many people ever died from the flu.
No, he doesn't know, but we know. 80,000 in America in a year.
Well, you know, it varies up and down, but it is tens of thousands in a year. And again, the other thing was the lack of preparedness. We didn't have any tests available, and the CDC, for some reason, wasn't allowing states to conduct their own testing, wasn't approving things. Whether this was because somebody there was trying to quash the numbers, we don't know. It it'll eventually come out as to why this happened. But when you think of that, up until this week, in America, there had been 11,000 people tested, and South Korea was testing 10,000 people a day. Certainly, that puts to the lie that we have the best healthcare system in the world. These things just what have you, and then we also have all those people that are American, you know. Trump came on the air this week and gave an 11-minute speech that was a total disaster. He had three huge falsehoods in the speech that was written out for him, that was prepared, like you said, Jared Kushner and Stephen Miller, you know, prepared it. First, he said that it was going to take in cargo goods as well as people, and that wasn't true. He talked about some of the other things as to who was going to be quarantined, and he said that anybody who wants a test can get it. All of these things just were totally false. Even at the end of the week, on Friday in his speech, he talked about Google having all these thousands of engineers or people working on this project, and they don't even have that many people, period. You know, he just makes these things up out of thin air. And, you know, the whole thing that he did on Friday was to pump up the stock market, because that's his prime concern. That was what he used to go around claiming that that he did. He helped everybody's economy and all their 401ks and whatever. And everybody has basically lost almost everything that they've gained over the last 3.5 years.
Well, didn't we learn that 87% of the rise in the stock market value since Trump came to power has been erased as of this week?
Gone.
That's trillions of dollars in value disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy may be the most destructive president in the history of the country.
Well, do you remember the New York Times did a piece a year, maybe a year and a half ago, about how he had probably lost more money as a businessman than anybody in history?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Well, yeah. he's following through. He's following through on this. And
so what do you think? Will that does this impact his reelection?
Well, we'll find out. I think it has to have some impact on the election. It certainly is going to be a black mark on his presidency, and the way he's handled things and contradicted himself. We really need leadership. It is going to be a topic. Of course, he came out and said we shouldn't politicize this, and then he proceeded to try to politicize this. What was interesting was after his first speech, the teleprompter speech from the Oval Office, the next day Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders came out, and Biden's speech was, you know, so much contrast, looking much more presidential, having much better delivery, having much more in the way of specifics that made sense, essentially saying this is what you could have as a president. You know, they talk about this being a change election again, one of the changes they say that people see in Biden is a return to normality rather than this craziness, this tweet storm that you hear every day. Bernie came out with ideas, many of which, I guess, were adopted late in the week when there was negotiations between Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin as to the effectively the bailout bill for this. And we should talk about it. The one thing that the Trump people wanted was that there be a payroll tax holiday, which, of course, is aimed at helping to destroy Social Security because we have a...
Right. I think you should explain that. This is a very important and is a very instructive how Trump, in the face of everything and despite all of his incompetence, manages to be competent when it comes to tanking working people.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it frees up, it saves money for employers because they have to match the payroll tax of the employees. So it frees up it puts money in their pockets, but it doesn't put money in everybody else's pocket because there's a lot of people who are laid off or who aren't working, so they don't get any benefit from this. But the payroll tax goes to fund Social Security.
Right.
And if you have a hiatus in that, that means that Social Security runs more and more of reserves and then becomes less stable. And, of course, then the Republicans are going to use this down the line saying, see, the Social Security is going to go bankrupt. We have to go get rid of Social Security. We have to go to the market-based system. So you know, they always want this. Now, it appears that Nancy Pelosi, I refer to her, you know, now as President Pelosi, how she stood firm and said, no, it's not going to be in the bill. We're going to do other things that are going to get money into people's hands. We're going to, you know, extend unemployment. We're going to extend Medicaid, which means people won't have to pay out of pocket. They're going to do all.
And it was also going to have free testing.
Two
weeks of paid sick leave.
Yep.
3 months of paid family and medical leave.
Right. So people who it encourages people not to go to work when they're sick.
Right.
And these are incentives. And there's still that proposal out there about giving everybody $1,000 check to help them rather than, you know, say, well, you don't have to pay payroll taxes. This puts money in their pockets. It's sort of like the Andrew Yang.
That's right.
Idea.
That's right.
Because
these are proposals that encompass both Yang's ideas, Medicare for All ideas, and other of Sanders' ideas. Plus, all of a sudden, the Republicans are ready to buy it.
Yeah, because they're desperate.
Up until now, they said, "Oh, we can't afford it. We can't afford it." All of a sudden, we can afford it.
Well,
we could afford it. It was always a lie that we couldn't afford it.
Well, we could always afford tax cuts for the rich, but we couldn't afford things that benefited the ordinary people. We lived through the Republican incompetence of the Hoover administration in dealing with the Great Depression, the Bush-Cheney administration in dealing with the Great Recession, didn't do everything that could have been done to make it shorter, and now we have this.
By the way, we're talking right now, it's Friday night.
Yeah.
Pelosi and Mnuchin announced that there was a deal on this thing. But as we're talking, that deal hasn't been approved yet by the White House. They are still holding back. The president made a comment. He supports the bill, but they still haven't released the language. And they're still saying, as we speak, that they're not yet certain. The White House.
Yeah, well, Mitch McConnell wasn't even going to vote on the bill. He was going to send the Senate home, and someone, you know, finally got to him, and he's holding the Senate there. He's not recessing the Senate. Can you imagine if that bill wasn't passed because he sent the Senate home? I thought he was.
I can't imagine what would happen if the bill isn't passed at all under any circumstances. Imagine that this bill isn't passed. Shouldn't there be some sort of an uprising? Shouldn't these congressmen's offices who didn't vote for this bill be burnt down or something like that? I mean, it's unbelievable. It would be unbelievable.
Well, I talked to Matt Cartwright today, and he said he's staying in Washington. Everybody there is staying in the House. Nancy Pelosi has that under control, waiting to just vote on the bill before they all go home for recess.
Well, it's so far they haven't done it, and it's late in the night, Friday night.
Yeah.
And they haven't done it because the White House is holding it up.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can't really make a deal with these fellas, with Trump's people. Because he reneges on the deal.
Right. That's what Matt Cartwright was saying. You know, it's never a deal until it's a done deal. And I reminded him, I said, this is what happened when Trump got the $25 billion for the wall. And he reneged on it and wound up getting $5 billion instead.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, yes, yes. Real estate developers are like that all the time. And this is a real estate developer, don't forget. But a real estate developer will strike a deal with another guy, and as they're going to sign it, he'll say, oh, except for this point, I forgot to mention. And the deal unravels.
Yeah.
They're always looking to see if they can squeeze an extra nickel. Always. And that's what this guy does. So Pelosi thinks she's got a deal. Steny Hoyer thinks they've got a deal because they've been told they have a deal. Trump's idea is, before I sign it, let me see if I can get something else. And then there's no deal.
No.
You can't do that with Pelosi. You can't do that with Kim Jong-un. You can't do that with anybody.
No. No.
You could do that if you're a real estate guy who's, you know, got other people completely at his mercy.
Right.
They got to have this guy. They got to have that job. They got to have that apartment, whatever. But if you're dealing with people who have some independent strength, you can't deal that way.
No. Like I said, that's going to be the contrast, whether you try to get back to normality or have this, you know, this hair on fire every week in the White House. I guess we should mention that this week we had the six primaries. in the Democratic race, and it did not bode well for Bernie. There was kind of remarkable things that happened in it. In Mississippi, Missouri, and even more surprisingly, Michigan, Bernie did not carry a single county. Biden won every single county. And in Michigan in particular, the vote was up enormously in the Democratic primary. Bernie issued a statement late in the week. He was staying in the campaign. He says, "I'm losing the war of electability, but I'm winning the war of ideas." There's going to be a debate on Sunday. We'll see how what happens. I don't know if they're going to have more primaries. I understand Louisiana has canceled its primary, or at least postponed it. Florida is supposed to be this coming week, and Biden is expected to win huge there. I mean, he won in Mississippi by, 60 or 70 points?
Let me ask you this. Louisiana postponed the election.
Yeah.
Is this a test for Trump? Will he say there's a national emergency? We have to postpone the election?
Well, I thought that I could see that coming. If he gets, come around September or October, and that could be the October surprise, he says, and he's down in the polls, he could try to pull something like that.
What would he point to? I never heard of an American election being postponed for any reason.
We had an American election in the middle of the Civil War.
I was going to say that. Lincoln didn't postpone the election, right?
We had an American election in the middle of World War II.
Yeah. So what would he point to? How could he justify? Not that he needs to justify it. He could make up anything, but what would he say, actually?
Who knows? Because there's no...
Who knows? That's right. Exactly. Who knows? Who knows? He'll tell you. It happened before. You'll say when. He'll say then.
Yeah.
Go argue, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one of those... possibilities that Bill Maher keeps talking about going on. I mean, there are signs like certain states, like Arizona, right now. Mark Kelly is pulling away. He has a double-digit lead in some of the polls against McSally, Senator McSally, and that could be a big enough lead to turn Arizona blue.
Well, that would be nice. Getting rid of McSally is good all by itself, but turning the state blue would also be good.
Yeah, and we still keep hearing Susan Collins is down in Maine. And there's other Senate seats that are now they think are in play that they didn't think of before. We should note in Alabama, Jeff Sessions is a runoff with Tommy Tuberville, I think his name is, the former Auburn football coach. But I think that seat might be lost to the Democrats. But other than that, this could break. This could be a way of the election. We don't know. We'll have to see. There's a lot that can happen between now.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens next week. We'll see what happens in the debate on Sunday. We'll see what happens with the market. We'll see what happens with the virus. See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps. Members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.